Paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? And maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights. And catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Well, they'll have opportunity to buy themselves a dream at the Keeneland sale starting Monday. The big box store of yearling sales, the fortnight of Keeneland dead ahead. And certainly as Sid Fernando joins us, Sid, Leem's Map sent up a flare for himself with the hopeful winner. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, that was a timely win because his second crop, the yearlings, will be selling this year. And, you know, he'd been a little slow up until this point. So this kind of really jump-started him, Steve.
You had a series of notes on Twitter that I thought were really interesting because just last week we were alluding again to the Unbridled Song legacy, as it were. And, you know, everybody will wait and watch on the Arrogate babies. But in the meantime, you know, here potentially is, you know, an emergent possibility when it comes to Liam's Map.
Yeah, it really, it's great to see. The Albaugh Family Trust were clients of ours. We, in fact, did his mating of Liam's Map, so it's doubly satisfying. We assisted them in the mating. He's, of course, out of there, getting near Miss Macy Sue. We did talk about it last week and pointed out that, you know, you have to not this time as well. It's particularly great to see because we're getting down to just the last few sons, you know, last few big sons, and Arrogate really is the backstop here. Last year, Spencer's Cross Traffic had a great year, was a leading first crop sire, had the champion 2-year-old filly, And so he had a grade one winning 2 year old last year, and now Liam's Map has followed suit. Interestingly, both those horses, neither race had two. So you hope there's bigger stuff ahead, you know, in the future. And this particular colt, this stallion, had a real good winner the week before at Saratoga, too, for Steve Asmussen. So he's really starting to show a little life here, and especially with a grade one winner before a sale, you know how that works with the sales market.
And also helpful when you reference the other winner from the previous, I don't know, it might have been a couple of days before, that was Wicked Whisper. And
that's right.
That was a filly. So a little notable that, you know, you won each on that front. The benefit of the earnings kicks him up, Liam's Map, to eight on the to eighth right now on the freshman sire list. You know, if you talk percentages, you then have to really discuss what's going on. I mean, obviously, American Pharoah is getting all kinds. He's getting turf winners. He's getting you name it. But the seemed to me that the first crop sire of the week, to some degree, was also Constitution. The buzz over the performance of Gouverneur Morris, part of the Constitution success. He's had 30 runners hit the track, and he's got 11 winners.
He's not only got the winners, but he's got two graded winners. Liam's Map is the first freshman sire in North America with a grade one winner. Constitution, I believe, still is the only freshman sire with two graded stakes winners.
Yep.
Son of Tappet, really doing extremely well. So he's a horse that's going to also light up with his yearlings this year. Absolutely right. And, of course, American Pharoah showing extraordinarily strong turf bias. He's got three stakes winners, but he had that big winner at Del Mar on the dirt. Very impressive last out. So I think we'll start to see his dirt horses start to kick in too, which is going to be, I think, where his real money is going to be made.
Along the same lines, and maybe, you know, maybe the value storyline going into Keeneland, too, Sid, hard not to have taken note of, and I've discussed it a couple of mornings in a row, that Florida Sire Series stake on Saturday. You had Liam's Lucky Charm, and I'm anxious to talk to Ralph Nix, a 91 buyer in an absolute knockdown drag out with the 3-5 favorite, or 2-5 favorite. And when you more closely examine Kozan, the journeyman stallion, he's 9 winners from his first 22 starters. I mean, which is a gaudy percentage
all year. In fact, I did a column, I can't remember, just before Saratoga started, where he was leading. He was the number one horse in the country, and I think American Pharoah at that time was seventh. And he's done extraordinarily well. Royal Delta's half brother by Distorted Humor. Colt was 2-for-2, really spectacular two starts before he got hurt. Really was whispered as a horse that would be on the Derby trail, and he, in fact, was the horse people thought would the Curse of Apollo. That's what the storylines were in
That's right.
the spring of that year. That was the year of American Pharoah, of course. But he ended up, because he didn't go on, Brent and Crystal Fernandez of Journeyman were able to get him. to Florida, and 25% of the ownership of the horse is owned by Gil and Marilyn Campbell, who supported this horse heavily. The Fernandes and the Campbells are well-known stallion makers. But, the Fernandes, of course, had Wildcat Air, and he died. And that's why they were looking for a new horse. And, of course, the Campbells at their Stonehenge South, which was formerly Waldemar Farms, where What a Pleasure stood, they have made so many stallions over the years, from Swart Dance, who was a well-raised Nijinsky on the turf, who they stood in Florida and made into a top stallion in Florida. You know, it's on unraised 49. The unraised 49er horse was a groomer sire of the Medaille d'Or filly that was top 3-year old filly. The big filly that sold for $9.5 million. Jerry Hollendorfer trained her.
Songbird.
Songbird, yeah. So they've had the damage in Songbird, who was by their 49er horse. So they've had Shenaney, other horses along the way. So they supported, the Campbells have supported this horse. And in fact, at the time I wrote that column, out of the winners at that time, seven winners or something, five were Campbell homebreds. And, I speculated at the time that the Campbell homebreds by Kazan will be very effective in the Florida Stallion Series. And it looks like it's going to be that way. In fact, the third horse in that race is also by Kazan.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, was 17 lengths back, but
yeah,
still,
yeah,
but it
yeah.
still
but
counts.
Again, I got it to black type.
It's still black type. Yeah. Also on this front too, and you want to talk some under the radar types and Summerfront for Airdrie, who stands for 10,000.
Yeah,
Fighting CB was basically the last man standing. Kenny McPeak. This came at Saratoga. The turf, the 2-year old turf action, and I know that there was a lot of bumping and grinding that went on in this race, but there was nothing wrong with that performance. First graded stake winner for Summer Front, the Son of War Front.
And he got a lot of buzz with his yearlings, a terrific buzz as the Airdrie Stallions do. And, you can look for him to even be better next year. Great turf mile, for the price. Produced a lot of very good-looking yearlings, his first crop last year. So he's a horse, he always was going to be pretty much a horse with a strong turf profile because of his own race record and that sire, Warfront. Even though Warfront himself, gets dirt horses, his sons, I'm sure they're going to be capable of it too, but they come in strong with the turf pedigree. And in this particular case, this colt, Fighting CB, he's a horse that, as with a lot of these turf horses, if they're promising enough, they're going to get an opportunity on dirt when they become 3-year-olds, just to see if they can get on the Triple Crown trail.
No doubt. Another one along the lines of underappreciated or not necessarily headline grabbing. Fast Anna for Three Chimneys.
I think he's got three stakes winners, doesn't he?
He's got three very, very far flung stake winners. He's got Fast Scene. That won the My Deer up at Woodbine, going short on the Poly.
Right.
been studying her, which was the Jerry Hollendorfer stake winner, the juvenile stake winner in the generous portion, going six, and then down in at Louisiana, in the Louisiana Cup with Scotty Boy.
Yeah, and consider that this horse was standing for, started off at, you know, 7,500, I believe.
Yep, 7,500.
He's not a stakes winner either. And, you know, he's out of Dreaming of Anna, Frank Calabresi, went to stud at Three Chimneys, and, you know, they really liked him there for the price, and he's got a lot of believers in him who backed him, and, you know, again, another promising horse that could rise to the ranks.
He has got 83 named runners, named foals, and 20 have made the races, 8 wins, so he's hitting at 40%, Sid.
Yeah. No, he's living up to his name.
Same thing, and again, on high percentages, you know, waiting for the graded stake types, but Byron and right at Hillendale, 94 foals, 29 runners, and 8 winners already. So they're getting to the races, and they're winning.
Yeah, and he would be a really interesting horse just because of his sire line. He was obviously a well-raced, terrific racehorse, but he's a hope for that wild again line that's not too prevalent in this country. So if he can, you know, the idea with him is that he would be a type of horse that could reignite a line. Sort of like Uncle Mo did with the Caro line. This horse is from the Neoctic branch of Ice Capade, who got wild again, and then wild again got awfully wild, the sire of Byron. And so if this horse can click, you know, he'd offer a really interesting different line to the prevalent lines that are really there nowadays. And he's got a terrific female family, too, obviously.
He's sitting fifth right now, with the third. Obviously, we got really the second half of the 2-year-old season to come, and the stake action is really only just heating up. How much of these statistics are buyers, do buyers rely on going into Keeneland next week?
The real thing that buyers kind of really, especially now when you're talking about second crop yearlings, and explain this quite a bit. You know, your first crop yearlings, they're very popular. Your second crop yearlings are kind of contingent on how you've been doing. And so these horses that we just mentioned, because they've been doing well, that's going to have a positive impact on their yearlings. Now, there's some other horses that have been at some of these farms, no point naming names, but everybody knows who they are. First crop 3-year-olds aren't performing that well, and the people now have yearlings by them, weanlings by them, mares and foals of them. And by the way, this is an aside, this is the example of why first crop horses are beneficial if you're a breeder. Here's why. You get your first crop yearlings, they sell really well, right? People, they're unproven, they're first crop. Now imagine if you're breeding to a horse in the third crop. That means that horse is First Crop is 3 right now. Say they're not doing that well. He's got 2-year-olds, and, you know, they're doing okay. And now you're selling a yearling in the third crop. You're just going to get buried because, you know, people look at what the 3-year-olds and the 2-year-olds are doing, and they go, no. And so that's one of the risks when you try to breed to a horse in this extremely commercial environment. And this has nothing to do with how good a horse is going to be or not, but it's the commercial environment that punishes you. And it's that type of commercial environment that has seen horses sold abroad. New Year's Day, Maximum Security was from his 2nd crop, you know. So it just shows you how the industry is so structured around the commercial sales that young horses have very little time to prove themselves. Essentially, you've got through your 3-year-old season before the September sale starts. So we're at exactly that point. And if you look at any stallion right now that has 3-year-olds, and you do your research and you see those 3-year-olds haven't done much, and his 3-year-olds probably haven't done much either, those third crop yearlings, they're the ones that are going to get buried at the sale. And that horse is a candidate to go out of Kentucky or out of the country.
Similarly, when shopping for bargains at Caneland, and we, mm-hmm. We'll get into this more, books 3, 4, 5, and the pinhookers. If you're looking to speculate,
yeah,
and you're trying to figure out, what to jump on, looking toward the 2-year-old in training sale season next year, anybody that that you think deserves extra attention, that and what properties at this time of year do people have in mind when they're when they're looking to have a valuable commodity to sell next winter, essentially?
Ultimately, what is going to determine your 2-year-old success, i.e. your pinhooking success if you're in that business, is being able to buy your yearling, one, at the right price, and B, that yearling's got to be a physical standout in some way. In other words, pedigree pay is going to play a lesser part. And we've seen this at these 2-year-old sales. These pinhookers are excellent judges of athletes, and they are excellent judges of projecting a yearling into a 2-year-old. So frequently, Steve, you'll get horses. If you look up the horse that ran second to Nucky in the Del Mar Futurity, for example, what was his name?
I just had this with 2 seconds ago. It was in my hand with Jay. Yeah. of course not. I mean, it's just crazy.
He was a Sky Kingdom.
Wrecking Crew.
Now, he was a Sky Kingdom. Here's a case in point. Would you say Wrecking Crew?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wrecking Crew is by an Empire Maker stallion by the name of Sky Kingdom.
Baffert,
who stands at Darby Dan for $5,000, but he was a obviously an outstanding physical. He sold as a weanling for $18,000. Those people successfully pinhooked the yearling for $115,000, almost made $100,000 profit. The people that got him for $115,000 then pinhooked him to a waiver tree for $875,000. So what you had here was a horse that didn't have the big commercial stuff on him, but he had that pedigree. If you look at the stallion that's at Hillendale for John Sikora, made three starts, won the Carter.
Army Mule.
So $4,000 stallion. But I think it's like an $825,000 2-year-old. So what essentially happens is those are the examples that will tell you that when it gets to your pinhooking, you need a horse that's projected to run fast. So those guys buy basically on that projection. Army Mule, for example, was a $35,000 yearling, Scanlon, who turned him into an $825,000 2-year-old, despite the pedigree of Frisian Fire and Sire. Same with Wrecking Crew, despite Sky Kingdom as a sire, $5,000 stallion, Frisian Fire, $4,000 stallion. Both of these 2-year-olds made over $800,000. Sire was played very little role. It was the actual physical when the pinhookers bought it, projecting he would perform well in the breeze shows, did, and boom. So I think that's where it becomes such a unique game, where pedigree kind of takes a backseat to a performance actually at the sale, and before that, the type of individual you're buying.
Interesting. And, you know, when I scroll down to Sky Kingdom to see where he stands, only 11 runners so far. He only has 49 named products out there, but two winners so far from 11, including Wrecking Crew. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you who's right above him, which is notable just because we saw him, you know, this past weekend. Mr. Speaker at Lane's End.
Yeah, he had a nice winner. Yeah.
Well, that's the Maya Engelhart Parcells three technique, who looked very good and got an 83 buyer breaking the maiden, and Mr. Speaker, who may have some properties as a versatile stallion, he's got 79 named foals and 18 have hit the track, so you know, mm-hmm. just a little under 20%. He's got four winners so far.
He's a horse. He was a horse. A couple of things with him. He's a Phipps horse. He ran a mile and a quarter. He ran on turf. But here's the thing about him. He and Lord Nelson at Spendthrift and American Freedom at Airdrie, three of the last good pulpits at stud, okay? And you know who Pulpit is the sire of? Tappan. Hmm. So all three of these horses, there's great hope that, you know, another Pulpit stallion of the caliber of Tappan. And don't forget, when Tappan went to stud, you know, it was a $12,000, $15,000, $17,000 stallion and tore it up, right? So all three of these horses, people are keeping a keen eye on them. Lord Nelson had that when he first retired. He was delayed in going to stud, but he's at Spencer. He's well backed. American Freedom, Airdrie, getting outstanding foals and extremely popular. It was raised by the West. And Mr. Speaker at Lane's End, the one look for him is that he is going to miss one season of foals. He got sick in South America and wasn't able to come back and cover it. So that's going to affect him commercially. you know, when you go to the sale like this and you don't have any 2-year-olds running, or following you, you got 3-year-olds but no 2-year-olds running. That's tough to overcome.
Absolutely. You know, yesterday, I don't know if you had a chance to hear Don Little Jr. yesterday. We had a really fun conversation, and Don.
Yeah, I had him in the background. Yeah,
he really got a nice response to it, and you know, I asked him about Wicked Strong, who's at Spendthrift for $7,500. You know, hard spun,
right?
Just a hard hitter and a consistent on the stallion front, but Wicked Strong, he's got 7 winners from 28 runners, and he had a big first crop, Sid.
Yeah.
130 yeah. out there of his.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Spencer Stallions, Steve, you know, when they first came in and started doing the Share the Upside program, they had the industry in arms because they were getting all these mares by creating this program, Share the Upside, where if you bred to, generally speaking, the concept is breed and pay the stud fee for 2 seasons, you own a lifetime breeding right. Well, that's one of the things that they had tried first with Into Mischief, and those people that ended up doing that, I mean, they just, their investment took off. Into Mischief started out with 10, now he's standing for 150. And imagine owning a breeding right in a horse like that, right? So that has made the Spencer of Share the Upside program extremely popular, and other farms start to copy it as well. But it helps to attract a lot of mares because people, if they believe in a stallion, by doing this, can actually participate in the upward trajectory. So, yeah, smart move.
Very much. I'm going to throw one more out here just because his progeny didn't necessarily figure to be successful early and going short. And you know, for me, that's one of those, you know, that's one of those first crop type scenarios that, you know, you then, you know, you watch the horses stretch out and you know, doing what they're meant to do. Commissioner, AP Indy, right? AP Indy son.
Yeah.
He's right. Had 22 runners, 9 winners already. And, you know, none of them to turn. And who would expect AP Indy sons, you know, to be getting, you know, win early types? I mean, Andy Serling famously had that AP Indy stat, you know, during AP Indy's long run where no AP Indy debuter had won at Saratoga going shorter than 7 furlongs. And so to see Commissioner get win early types, that I would think bodes well down the road.
Yeah, and Commissioner was a horse that might have won the Belmont, you know.
Don't remind me of that.
Yeah, exactly. and he's a horse that has a pretty stout pedigree, as you said, because not only by 18, he's out of a touch gold mare, and the second dam is out of a rear fan mare. Stood inexpensively at Windstar and is one of the last 2 good sons of AP&D, which brings us to the other horse that we haven't mentioned so far in our talks of these first crop sires, one of the most expensive to go to stud, Honor Code. Now, Honor Code has had, to his credit, some promising runners, one of which, Honor AP, for John Sheriff, who has another Honor Code as well.
We just brought him up with Jay.
Right. And so he's percolating. Unfortunately, going to sales, he doesn't have that big stakes when, you know, big stakes winner. But I'll tell you what, this Honor AP that I actually saw as a yearling last year was my favorite yearling. Just an absolute knockout of a physical specimen, and he's got the coloring to go with him. It was a flashy day, and he's got a swagger of a walk, and he looks like he's going to turn into a pretty good racehorse. Runs like his sire did from the back of the pack, and it's funny because when Honor Code was going to stud, a lot of people asked me, well, his running style, do you think that's going to have some effect? And, you know, it might. If they all run the way he does, you know, they might need some distance, especially with his pedigree. And he's not a horse you give up on at all. He may be a horse that you just got to be a little more patient with.
Well, and you talked about all of the different properties, and maybe the most important property is that he's out of Hollywood Story, the greatest race filly in history, one of my absolute all time favorites.
Really? Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're talking about Honoré P. here.
Yeah. Well, the dam, you know, famously with John Sheriffs. You know, for the Krikorians, and she debuted. She got beat in her debut, and I don't know how many horses have this as a resume, but she debuted in a maiden special weight, and then never ran in anything else other than a stake the rest of her career.
And she didn't win her debut, right?
No, she broke her maiden in the Hollywood Starlet.
Yeah, so it's very similar to American Pharoah.
A little bit. Same thing. A little bit. Yeah.
Lawson's debut never ran nothing else except a stakes race, and he broke his thing in the Del Mar Futurity.
Well, and she won, I want to say three races, placed in a ton of others. The only place she ever won was Hollywood Park, which was just ridiculous. I mean, Hollywood Story, Hollywood Park, and you know, she won the Biakoa. She won the Starlet. She won the Biakoa. She won one of the other big mare races. You know, they're gone from the landscape, and so they escape your mind. I adored her. She actually is the horse that I was aware of John Sheriffs and kind of watched him from that point, because she caught my eye that he liked her enough to run her in the Starlet, despite the fact that she was a maiden. We've talked about her a million times, and he's gotten a number of the progeny. Some of the boys have been sold off and have gone other places. Dale Romans had one, and I think the Krikorians don't use John exclusively. I think Peter Urton gets horses as well from the Krikorians or Yak.
And it also has a Krikorian. It also has a signature Krikorian. Characteristic to his pedigree, and that is that Hollywood Story is out of a Dinoformer mare, and Dinoformer has always been a big part of the Krikorian breeding program. He's very much a fan of Dinoformer. In fact, doesn't he have that stallion out there by Dinoformer?
Mr. Big.
Mr. Big, yeah, that's right.
Mr. Yeah. And yeah. You know, trying to craft kind of an unusual heat or a storyline, you know, the California style. Here we go. The Vanity is the race I couldn't remember. She won the Vanity as well as she also won the Hawthorne Handicap, the Biakoa, and the Hollywood Starlet. She was 0-4, including being fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in 2003. Yeah. And then she came back a month later, you know, give or take, and won the Hollywood Starlet. I think she was half bridled. That was half bridled's year in the juvenile.
Right.
Yeah, here it is. She only got beat by Half Bridled, Ashado, and Victory USA.
Oh my goodness!
That was there, and she was fourth to those three. What a group! To give you an idea how good that Breeders' Cup was, Society Selection was 10th.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good.
And Chief used Ray. Yeah. Chief used Ray Ganpath. I love it. So great. God, Forest Music was last. At 7-1. What a field this was. This was really a nice field. I've forgotten. Tarlo was in here at a price. I should pull this race back up. Remember this one? This was when Julie Crone, because Half Bridled drew the 14 hole and oh, she can't win from the 14, and she whistled.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. That's why we love this. Well, Sid, this was fun, and next week, what's your Keeneland plan?
Well, I'm going to Keeneland on Saturday, and I'll be there, you know, for the first week.
Nice.
I'll leave that dark day, come back.
On Friday. Nice. All right, so we'll talk to you. Talk to you Wednesday. Book one will be in the book. And how many sessions?
Yeah, right, yeah.
How many sessions for book one?
I think it's
two or more.
Two. I think it's two.
Okay.
Yeah, I've looked at every single hip in this sale. So,
wow.
I can't keep track. Oh yeah, okay. I've gone through every single hip.
Good for you.
From the first book all the way to the last book, and you know, I was talking to Jerry Crawford the other day, and Jerry's a buyer of Donegal, obviously, and he and I were both saying that, you know, this year there seems to be a lot of classic type of colts in the sale. More so than we've kind of seen before. Because for Jerry, I kind of looked through the horses that I think will stay the Derby trip. And it seems like this year has been quite a bit, in my opinion.
Nice. Well, it won't take long for the prices to fly. You got three tappets within the first seven hips.
yeah.
To get things to go. Here's the opening day. Starting on Monday, you got actually five fillies to start things off alphabetically. They start with the O's, but a tappet, an Into Mischief, a Kitten's Joy, a tappet, an Empire Maker. First colt is a More Than Ready, then another tappet filly, a Malibu Moon colt, an American Pharoah filly, a Curlin filly, a couple of Medaglia d'Oro colts going as the 11th and 12th, including what looks to be a pretty fancy hip 11. Looks nice out of Overheard Stakes Dam. So as always, we look forward to Keeneland. Safe travel out there, Sid, and we'll talk from the sale.
We'll talk next week.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we expect to check in as well with John Sakura and get a sale advance. Get a hold of Sid at Sire Watch and at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. If you're going to be at the sale next week and you want to talk about your broodmare band with Sid, good opportunity to connect with him. He's going to come to you, and you'll be at the sale. We're going to go to Indiana and check in with Bill Downs next. A couple of really nice stakes today, the Caesars and the Indiana Grand. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horseshoes.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horseshoes.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horseshoes.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horseshoes.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of. This is the life that he planned. On the love, the same old love in the house that Jack built.
The house that Jack built.
Remember this house.
We're back at the races.
There was a
fence that held. Just about 10 minutes or so to the top of the hour, and out to Indiana we go, and Bill Downs, nice card today at Indiana that is highlighted by the Caesars and by the Indiana Grand, the three-year-old specialty races, and both big full fields, and it's a terrific card overall. A couple of good maiden specials for Indiana breds. There's a good allowance involved here that starts the late pick four. And, of course, yesterday you had Indiana specialty stakes named for legends, Florence Henderson and A.J. Foyt. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And, you know, yesterday, the two Indiana bred opportunities and 100,000 stake for both male and female. And you had some hijinks, boy, in the in the boys race. A little hurly burly.
Yeah. You know, watching the race, after the race, after the stewards sorted out whatever the heck they had to sort out, I'm within about 2 seconds of their booth, so I can kind of go in there and see what I can see as well. And it's, you know, a lot of times they've looked at it already about five times. They tell me what they saw, and it looked like in that race that whole lot of chalk where they went off as the 3-1 favorite for Amos first time on the turf was. Getting it was just was not happy, and he got out a little bit going into the turn. And then before that, Mystery Unbridled, the 11 horse, who usually likes to be on the on or near the lead, was covered up behind horses. He was, before a whole lot of chocolate kind of got out, he was very, very rank, headstrong, whatever you want to call it, in between horses. And then a whole lot of chocolate came out on Mystery Unbridled, and that's when everything went haywire. About three horses or so, besides those two, got involved with all sorts of jostling around that first turn. And Huntstown was just outside of it, but he didn't have to go out to like the five path or anything like that. So he got up for the win. He's run big on occasions in these Indiana Bred Stakes races. But that was quite a race named for AJ Foyt. A lot of goofiness. A lot of I want to call it race riding because the horses weren't kind of just did their own thing, if you will. But in a race that was named for AJ Foyt, you did have a little bit of chaos. And then you mentioned the Florence Henderson Stakes. Of course, Florence known for the Indy 500 and all that. But of course, for me, it's always about the Brady Bunch. But Wonder She Got Thunder for Brad Cox bounced back in a big way after a bad performance last time out, but was able to stay patient and got the trip along the inside. Marina's Legacy also got a pretty good trip as well, staying off the speed of French Legacy. Marina's Legacy took over in upper stretch, but Wonder She Got Thunder won a pretty good battle in the stretch and was able to get up for the win. And a three-year-old defeating the older Marina's Legacy in the Florence Henderson Stakes.
Well, and for players, you had big balloons, and even though Marina's Legacy, who was beaten at about 3-5, a little bit above 3-5, you still had nice mutuals. You had 1380 winner, and then you had a 50-1 shot, finished fourth, pretty assets. And so you ended up with an $1,800 superfecta for a buck. The prices in the Foyt were insane. And
yeah.
You had, it was crazy. You had an $1,150 triple for a buck, and you had a 10 cent super, pay $2,086. And the super pool was $32,000. This was nuts. I made note of it early in the morning. 11-1, 10-1, 14-1, 26-1. First, second, third, fourth in the AJ Foyt. So if you figured this one out, you filled your coffers.
Yes, and then the horse that I thought who finished third in the race probably had a lot of trouble. And Mr. Gary D got taken out very, very wide around that first turn and was still able to finish third, beating about a length and a half. He'd be one that I'd be, following out of that race. And, it was double digits in the first, second, third, and fourth place slots in the AJ Foyt.
Well, and Kim Hammond finishing, you mentioned that Mr. Gary D. That's also Kim Hammond, first and third. Very nice result. And turn our attention from the Indiana Breds to today, Bill. And, boy, you've got full fields in both of these stakes, 200,000, three-year-old fillies, three-year-old boys. Obviously, Gray Magician, who ran at Philly on Monday, is a scratch out of the Caesars. Let's start with the boys' race, and I assume Evil Eye Maker is going to draw in and run?
Yeah. Yes, he is, and also Rise the Guy is a scratch. So if Imperial Mission wants to run in the race, his last two wins have been really sharp. Obviously, he is making a huge class jump. He'll be able to get in as well.
How about that? And I kind of liked I was interested in Rise the Guy.
I was too. So I was a little disappointed to hear that one.
All right. Well, we'll get to a 12-1 shot in the girls' race in a minute. Talk about the boys. What are you doing in here? There's some classy participants, but you've also got, as usual at this time of year with this kind of a race, you do have some horses, that are, making some moves when it comes to the turf and dirt. What are we doing in here?
Well, you know, you got horses that ran in Grade One company last time out, and they finished the 4th, 7th, and 9th in the Secretariat Stakes at Arlington Park on Arlington Million Day. I'm talking about Crafty Daddy, Faraway Kitten, and Clint Maroon. You know, Crafty Daddy contested a pretty good pace in the Secretariat Stakes. Of course, they changed the distance of the Secretariat Stakes from a mile and a quarter to a mile. And Crafty Daddy was contesting the pace and, you know, faded in last furlong. But that was a pretty strong race. The winner of that race, that Chad Brown horse, is quite a runner. So no disgrace there. So it's to me, it's like you're in the camp of the horses that are coming out of the Grade Ones, or then what do? There's a lot of other horses that are, you know, up-and-coming horses. You know, I still haven't mentioned Faraway Kitten for Mike Maker. Remember seeing him win the that race up in Canterbury Park, that $200,000 stakes race, the Mystic Lake Derby. Looked like he was going to get stopped, and then he dove over towards the inside and deep stretch and was able to get up for the win. He proved that race wasn't a fluke by winning the American Derby at Arlington Park. Then he had a wide trip in the Secretariat Stakes, has a much better post today. And I don't think you really want to be that wide. You know, I think we'll be firm today on that turf course. But, you know, over the last week, we had quite a bit of rain. So we're not going to be setting any track records today is what I'm trying to tell you in terms of how firm the turf course will be, even if they do list it as firm. But after that, Steve, you know, there's a lot of different directions you can go.
That's for sure. And you got the two California invaders to consider in here. Keith DeSormo sends Irish Heat Wave for Calumet. This is an unusual heat colt that is coming out of a allowance try where he faced some nice horses. And you also got Baltus showing up with that Irish bred for Slam Dunk for Nick Casada coming out of the La Jolla. Where he was a respectable fourth, only beaten five lengths. You got a million things to consider here. I didn't think Firewater Jake was a toss. He's going to be forwardly placed. I think there's a lot to like coming in from Chicago against Allowance Company. It's his first stake try. What's wrong with Firewater Jake at probably every bit of that 10-1?
Yeah, you know, it was a nice winner against three-year-olds in allowance optional claiming race. I watched the race back. He won under, you know, wasn't a heavy pressure by any means. And what he did in that race, he showed a new ability to rate. It was his first win in which he wasn't on the lead at every call. And I think that's important in this race. And there doesn't look like there's a whole ton of early speed in the race. Looks like the speed horses are long shots. So Firewater Jake might be interesting. Yeah, the other speed horse in the race we haven't mentioned is Spectacular Gem. He's been on dirt the last couple of times out. But if you look at those races down at the fairgrounds this winter, he wasn't that bad as well. He might be on or near the lead as well. You mentioned Baltus with Rietka is how I think I'm going to pronounce it. I think the J is silent from what I've been listening to other race calls and getting on my foreign language sites and trying to figure out the pronunciation of this one. But, you know, he rarely runs a bad race, but he's trying to get his breakthrough performance. He's been knocking on the door in the greatest stakes races, list of stakes races, and Rietke will be making his late closing run as well. So it's a really strong race from top to bottom. I think Crafty Daddy does go off as the favorite in this spot, but I think horses like Rietka and Irish Heat Wave are going to get a little bit more money than originally planned because you have a couple of scratches in the race. You got a 3-1 shot and a 10-1 shot scratched out of the morning line. So therefore, everyone else is going to have to be slotted down just a little bit. And I think those two horses might take some of that money when it's all said and done.
Let's turn our attention to the girls' race that comes ahead of it. And I mentioned some pricing. You do have the same scenario in here with a number of horses that have had, you know, some quality about them. They've kept, you know, really nice company, including the likes of Winter Sunset, who we've talked about with Wayne Catalano, and the Phillips team and the Coffee Pot partnership. You've got Boxwood coming out of the Coaching Club American Oaks, getting back on grass. Last time was back at the beginning of the year when she won the Ginger Brew. This for Eddie Keneally, who's had a great summer. Mike Maker shows up in here out of the Lake Placid with Amandrea. I mean, there's all kinds of quality to this. When I mentioned a price, I'm interested in story time. The Mandy Pope, Tom Amos, Broken Vow filly, coming off of an allowance win at Indiana. And I, in fact, she's 2 for 2 over the Indiana turf. And I'll take a swing with her at a fat price.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned a couple of the two Morty Lion favorites in the race with Dignity. First time on the turf. I think she'll take to the turf. She has enough turf reading to think that she'll run well on the turf. Declaration of War out of Seeking the Gold Mare has produced a couple of turf winners. With Dignity came in with a lot of hype in the Indiana Oaks and was way too far back in that race. The early pace was not that fast for a grade three race, and she had way too much work to do. She's been off since that race and been training down at Churchill Downs. And I think you got Julian LaPeru back aboard once again for Ian Wilkes. And with Dignity, it's a very interesting storyline with her trying to turf for the very first time. Then you got the Ta Wee winner. She's on the warpath for trainer Steve Margolis. Won the race, went off as a 6-5 favorite. And she won the winning margin wasn't indicative how easy she won the race. She lacked racing room and upper stretch. And then Chantal Sutherland, who was aboard that day on July 18th and is aboard again for today's race, was just looking for racing room. And it's almost like you can see her looking. She's like, all right, can't get through the inside, can't get in the two path, can't get the three path. All right, I'll go four wide. And she wore down the eventual second place horse. And as she's on the war path, is a perfect 3 for 3 on the turf. And like I said, I think her best is certainly going to put her in the mix in this race. This race is much tougher than the Tawee Stakes, but like I said, about the traffic trouble that she had in that race in the Tawee Stakes, she was much the best, and I think that she fits as well. You mentioned Boxwood, who ran up against Guarana in the Coaching Club American Oaks, winner of a listed stakes race at Gulfstream Park the last time she was on turf. And, you know, that pace was pretty good. I know it's 7.5 furlongs at Gulfstream. They tend to go fast in that turn, but they took some pretty fast fractions in that race. And she might be the one that is on the lead here, just glancing at. You know, there's a couple of sprinters, so I don't know if she'll be on the lead, but she'll be up close, I think, in this Indiana Grand Stakes.
Yeah, I mean, Boxwood, you know, for those that were unfamiliar with her, I mean, Bill Pape, who we know best from his participation over the hurdles in American Steeplechase, this is a homebred of his by English Channel, every right to resume her turf success. And she's 9-2, Brian Hernandez Jr. aboard. I'm betting story time. I'll take the price on Amos here. If she runs back to that allowance performance over the course and over the distance, and granted, she loses Channing Hill Channing's going to ride for his father-in-law, and he's been on Winter Sunset since the outset. So I understand that, but this is actually a filly that's run for virtually everybody that has ridden her. So Jermaine Bridgemahan, quite capable, and at 12-1, I'm interested. So what a terrific pair of races you got here, Bill.
Yeah, you know, as much as I'm excited about the Caesar Stakes, I might be even slightly more excited about the Philly Stakes race, and because there's just so many interesting storylines from just a headline sense, and as well as just from a gambling perspective, trying to piece together this race with so many horses coming from so many different locales, and should be a fun race. And you know, and the weather, by the way, is just absolutely gorgeous. Could be the best day of the year. I don't even know how we did this. It's, you know, it seemed like we had a lot of rain the last couple of weeks, but there's nary, I put a tweet out there, there's nary a cloud in the sky, and the temperature should be about 80 degrees, so it won't be too hot for the horses, won't be too hot for the humans watching, and it should be a great, great day of racing on the Caesar Stakes Day at Indiana Grand.
Looking forward to it. The post time for the Grand itself is 5:31, and then 28 minutes later, you've got the Caesars. So carve out at least that 45 minutes to sign on for the two stakes. There's a state bred maiden race that comes right ahead of it, and a open turf sprint allowance that starts the pick four. So good racing, another terrific card tomorrow as well. And one of the treats about Indiana Grand is midweek action like this, and especially coming off of the big Labor Day weekend seasonal wrap-ups at Ellis and Del Mar and Saratoga. You're the focus, Bill, and we'll be tuning in, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
You got it, Steve. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Bill Downs, one on Twitter, the voice of Indiana Grand. And, you know, I should mention, we did see the note. I guess Nancy Holtis is going to take time away here at the, with quite a bit of, racing left on the season. Some family things. And I'm being very I shouldn't even say this. I'm just speculating. I know Bonnie had been ailing a little bit, and I hope everything's okay. So thoughts with Nancy with whatever's happening. We'll take a timeout here. Andy Serling back home. Andy called me when he got back to Manhattan yesterday, and unpacked everything, and switching tack, not just the horsemen and the horses that move from Saratoga, all the personnel, they got to make that same transition. And we get ready for Belmont Stakes, stakes at Belmont, I should say, starting on Friday, the Christy Cat, and then the big card on Saturday. Andy Serling next.